This is John Gramstrand, and I'm a certified energy specialist for CHS Ag Services in Stephen, Minnesota. We're pleased to bring you this update from the Red River Farm Network. CHS Ag Services, providing solutions for your success.
Friday Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. I'm Randy Conan, along with Sierra Doctor. We'll also hear a report from Whitney Pittman as well. USDA expects lower wheat supplies, higher ending stocks of corn, and higher soybean ending stocks. 23-24 all wheat ending stocks are expected to be down 11% from last year at 556 million bushels. Corn ending stocks are expected to be up 805 million bushels from last year, and if realized, it would be the largest corn supply since 2016-2017 at 6.7 billion bushels. 23-24 soybean ending stocks are forecast at 4.75 billion bushels, up 4% from the current marketing year.
Midwest Marketing Solutions President Brian Hoop says USDA surprised the trade by cutting wheat production more than expected in the May supply and demand report.
We knew it was going to be down, but this is probably more than what the trade expected. It's below last year's crop as well, and it's certainly bullish, I think, here for the hard red wheat contracts of Kansas City. We're seeing that as the upside leader. Chicago is going to struggle in here, especially with having a larger production than what was expected, although that's kind of minor. It's well above last year's numbers, so I think you're going to see a lot of spread trade. Kansas City gaining against Chicago. Maybe Minneapolis also joining in when they start giving hard red spring wheat number production estimates. We could see that spread against Chicago, but wheat's going to be the upside leader.
Hoop says the soybean numbers were bearish too.
But yield production, 52 bushels an acre. That was what they said at the Ag Outlook Forum. The production number matches up with that, even though that was above trade guesses. We're sitting there with a carryout number, 335 million bushels, well above any trade guesses, well above last year. Again, just like the corn market, we're looking at November beans trading in that 12-30 range. We don't support $12 beans at 335 million bushel carryout. If we can drop that carryout back below 300, I think you could see a rally, but it's going to have to come from some sort of a weather event.
StoneX chief commodities economist Arlen Suderman says wheat production is the headline in today's supply demand report.
Well, the biggest thing that the trade is noticing is smaller wheat production than what the trade anticipated. And we've been expecting a very small crop, and is even smaller than what we anticipated, largely due to the drought that we're seeing in the plains continuing to have its effect. And the other thing was bigger corn and soybean stocks than what the trade expected, although slightly smaller than what we anticipated. USDA did as expected and used their acreage estimates from the March 31 planting intentions report and used their yield estimates for corn and soybeans from the February outlook meeting.
And Suderman says the supply numbers pretty much in line with trade estimates, but demand was the surprise.
USDA was very aggressive in its Chinese corn import number, considering what's happening there with its economy, with its livestock production, and what we're seeing with growth in its own domestic production, let alone where they get those exports from, with the tensions rising between the United States and China and strengthening between China and Brazil. They were also very aggressive in U.S. exports and in feed usage.
After this morning's supply and demand report, Van Aunen & Company CEO Jim Emter says a tug-of-war has developed, with bull news being led by the wheat.
Good news and bad news is we got a tug-of-war developing. We've got the wheat market here that got positive numbers, positive stats, a 556 million bushel new crop carryout versus expectations of 602. So if you're looking for bull news, that's where you're going to find it. USDA gave us at least some hope on the bull front in the yield perspective of wheat. And then as you look to the spring wheat needing to get acres planted, that is no reflection in this report, but will be something to monitor as we work ahead. So that gets the wheat bulls excited over there. We've seen liquidation in Chicago. We've seen even Kansas City pull back. But now with this move, again, maybe some momentum from that sector.
Corn and soybean stocks were much higher than anticipated, causing an initial pullback that seems to have bounced back some following wheat.
2.222 billion bushel carryout for new crop corn, a 335 million bushel carryout for new crop soybeans. Those were well above expectations, and those higher big production numbers flowed all the way through into the world numbers, where USDA gave us new crop S&D world production of 122.50 million metric tons, and that would be the carryout number, and corn at 312.90 million metric tons, well above expectations on that front. So if you, as you watch this develop, right away we saw wheat take off, the corn market and bean market faded. Beans and corn came back off that wheat rally, you know, kind of gave up a little steam now, and the tug of war has begun.
Columbia Grain and Agronomy, our Villa, North Dakota location manager, Tyler Kiefer, reminds farmers to be patient and not rush soil conditions.
That's your, one of your most important things, that you're getting the temp the right condition before you try to put some sort of seed in the ground. The other important thing is making sure you wait and you're able to get a good seed bed to plant into, just to allow your seed, good soil, the seed contact, and have your best emergence that way.
Kiefer says you only get one chance to put that crop in the ground right.
Basically, it's just making sure your soil's fit. You never want to plant into something that's not fit, because you just don't get the germination you want. You don't get the you just don't have the ability to produce the best possible crop that you could if you would wait for better soil conditions this early on. And it is. It's not technically early on. I mean, it is starting to get later and later, but I think these last few days have definitely helped dry some things out. We've seen some fields go from wet to dry in a matter of 24 to 36 hours.
Researchers at the University of Minnesota have discovered a new species of parasitic wasp that could prove effective against soybean gulmage. Researchers found there was no information on this wasp in any scientific record, and findings suggest this new-to-science wasp is likely being a natural enemy of the soybean gulmage. Soybean gulmage is a recently emerged pest in the Midwest that can have devastating impacts on soybean fields. You're listening to the Red River Farm Network.
Friday Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. South Dakota State University Extension state climatologist Laura Edwards says the chance of rain this weekend, after this chance of rain, things should finally start to dry up.
On Saturday, we will continue to see chances of rain across the region, and kind of slowing down that planting progress that we've had over the last week or so across eastern Dakotas. But after that, it looks like a return towards sunnier, drier conditions. And all throughout, with the exception of some time over the weekend, but starting next week and over the next couple of weeks, we see temperatures going towards near to above average for much of the region. So despite the rain that we've seen here this week, I think things will dry out, hopefully turn around so that we can get some more of those crops planted in the ground.
Edwards reflects on back-to-back, well, 1 year ago today, when farmers were dealing with high winds and a derecho.
Today is the one-year anniversary of the derecho that came across eastern South Dakota into western Minnesota. Spun off about 34 tornadoes, created quite extensive infrastructure damage, and turned out to be over $1 billion of damage in that one-day storm alone, between the windstorm and dust and everything like that. So certainly that's a significant and a recent memory in people's minds.
A U.S. Supreme Court decision has disappointed animal agriculture groups across the country. Red River Farm Network farm broadcaster Whitney Pittman has more.
Yesterday, the U.S. Supreme Court made the decision to uphold California's Proposition 12 that will set new animal welfare standards for meat sold in the state. Animal Ag Alliance Manager of Communications Emily Solis says this will impact pork producers across the country.
California is a state that produces less than 1% of the U.S. pork supply, but they consume about 13% of it. So they are, you know, shipping in a lot of pork from other states. And as part of Proposition 12, it was stated that any pork sold in the state also has to adhere to these standards. So that's going to have a really big impact on pig farmers across the country that are going to now have to adhere to these policies that were put in place and these standards that were voted on by California residents that farmers in other states and citizens in other states didn't necessarily have the opportunity to weigh in on.
Proposition 12 was passed back in 2018. Solis says other states have seen similar proposed legislation, but ballot initiatives have become more popular.
Ballot initiatives specifically are a really kind of common tactic that we're seeing recently from animal rights groups because it's a way for them to, one, bypass the standard legislative process. They don't give anyone the opportunity to testify. There's not that background to it. It's just anyone that votes can come in and make a decision on this. And they're also really relying on, for the most part, the general public's lack of understanding of modern agriculture, of why we do things the way that we do. In theory, you know, all of this sounds really nice, but is it really better for the animals? They don't give, you know, that opportunity for animal welfare experts to weigh in or people that are truly involved in animal welfare circumstances.
Reporting Agriculture's Business, I'm Whitney Pittman on the Red River Farm Network.
USDA's Farm Service Agency providing additional flexibility and further enhanced disaster recovery assistance for payment of 2022 losses. North Dakota Farm Service Agency State Executive Director Marcy Svenningson says it's a short window for farmers to finish their applications.
Well, as you know, 2022 was a really tough year for our North Dakota ranchers. And we actually had about 2,100 notices of loss filed last year in the county offices. To date, we've paid on 1,200 applications related to those notices of loss, totaling about $10 million. But that leaves about 900 that people never finished up, never came back in and filed an application for.
Svenningson says it's a second chance for farmers and ranchers to recover lost assistance from the Livestock Indemnity Program.
Through June 2nd, those producers and ranchers can come in, they can still finish that notice of loss that they started, or maybe they found out that there was a 30-day window to file a notice of loss and they went, oh gosh, I'm 2 months past that, and just gave up and decided not to even bother to apply. They can still come in, they will be timely filed, they can bring their information in, get the application filled out, and as long as they do all that by June 2nd, they will still be eligible for that LIP program.
This is the Red River Farm Network. Welcome to Inside Agriculture on the Red River Farm Network. Let's catch up with Ag Week reporter Jenny Schlecht. Jenny, what do you have for us on the cover of Ag Week?
Well, this week, Katie Pinky and I are presenting a story about something that's very close to a lot of our hearts in rural areas, and that's how childcare impacts rural and farm employment. Kind of the basis of our story is that the North Dakota Soybean Council has an employee who has had to quit full-time work and has actually gone to work at a daycare part-time to ensure that her kids have childcare. And it's obviously an issue in all industries, but I think in rural areas we have probably a more pronounced problem because we just don't have enough daycares.
Not only that, but you got to drive a whole lot further to get to them, too.
Right, and not only that, you might have to drive to take your kids, but also a lot of the daycares, and one in particular that we talked to, have employees who come from a really long ways, and when gas prices go up or inflation's up, they just aren't willing to drive out because they really can't make enough money, and the daycares can't make enough money to pay them enough to incentivize them to come out. And so it's a tough situation, and it really impacts the career trajectory and the available workforce in ag.
Is there something that can be done at all about this? You mentioned the Soybean Council. Are they looking at anything like that too at all or not?
You know, they did use the state's infinite work policy for this employee for a while, and they're open to other ideas. And of course, North Dakota just passed a really large child care package that hopefully will have some impact. And in the next few weeks, we're going to be doing other stories on other communities and other programs that are hoping to have an impact, especially in rural areas.
Well, Jenny, that sounds interesting. Looking forward to reading about it in next week's Ag Week. And let's check markets before we leave you this afternoon. We're seeing July wheat Minneapolis 9.25 higher. Chicago's up 8.25. At Kansas City wheat 33.25 higher. Corn's trading mixed, a penny higher to 6 lower, and soybeans down 15 to 25 cents. This is the Red River Farm Network.